Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 64. And before we dive into today's topic, let's do a smart habit check-in. It's been a while since we've done that, right?
Yeah, it definitely has. So let's do it. Okay, so lately a smart habit I've been working on is scrolling less. So I was listening to a podcast the other day. I forget the name of it, but we'll put it in the show notes. It's related to books. I heard about it when I met Melanie Paget Powers, actually, at a recent conference. I met her and we had lunch together, and she was telling me about a podcast that I'm really into now, and it's for book lovers, and they talk about all kinds of different books. So we'll make sure to list it because the name is not coming to me. But one of the things that they mentioned as a tip, and this podcast is full of great tips, by the way, and book recommendations, was to put your, if you like to read or listen to audiobooks, digital books or listen to audiobooks, to put those apps next to the apps for social media on your phone. Mm-hmm. So whenever you go to maybe click over to, I don't know, Instagram or Twitter or something, you see that other app and it's a reminder, like, do I want to scroll or would I rather read? And so I think it's a really cool way to sort of remind yourself that sometimes we just scroll mindlessly. And there are other things that we probably would rather spend our time doing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really cool tip. And that's what I'm working on. What about you?
Oh, I love this tip. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of that too, just because of the political situation that's in the world right now. Mm-hmm. So for the last, a month and a half, unfortunately, I've been trying to stay off social media as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I even deleted all the social media apps from my phone for a good month so that mm-hmm. they're only were available on my computer. And that's definitely helped doom scrolling less.
Right. That's a good tip.
Yeah. It was kind of a flashback to when the pandemic started, you know, when you just like, you know, there are only bad news out there and you do want to know them, and it's healthy to live through all those emotions and feelings, but you kind of just get sucked into it and you can't, it's really hard to get out of that, you know, and do anything productive with your time if you just keep doing that. So, the habit I wanted to share today was daily journaling. It really helped me too during the pandemic. And I stopped doing that earlier this year, you know, when this whole thing in Ukraine unfolded. And it was just like such a shock to me that I just stopped doing a lot of the things that were a habit for me before. But I picked up this habit again recently. I do the 5-minute journal for myself every day, and I have a 1-line-a-day journal for each of my kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie, it's difficult to do on most days, but I make myself do it. And it does help. It does help to look for something good, however small, something nice, or, you know, something, I don't want to necessarily, you know, make light of the situation, but something happy that's kind of in our small bubble that happened each day, whether like a kind act or something my kids said that I wanted to remember. So that's really been helpful.
That's good. I like that tip. And that's helpful. That's helpful for any time that you're going through something difficult, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Cool. Okay, so back to the topic of today's episode. We wanted to share a conversation about limiting beliefs, what they are, how they can affect the work that we do as translators and interpreters, and how to challenge or overcome them. Limiting beliefs are like deeply ingrained stories that we tell ourselves about why we can or can't make progress in a given area. And we all have limiting beliefs about something in our freelance translation or interpreting business. Some are related to how much money we believe we can earn, while others might be related to our professional development, productivity, language skills, specializations, or pretty much anything else that you do in your business. And I think it's important to note that limiting beliefs can affect any area of our lives, not just our work. You might have limiting beliefs about a personal goal that you want to achieve or your ability to do something that you've always wanted to do or change. But today we're going to focus on those limiting beliefs that rear their ugly heads in our work lives. In fact, I think it's safe to say that we all experience limiting beliefs in our work to some extent, no matter which stage of our career or which stage of our business we're in. I can definitely relate to that. Some of these things we just kind of tell ourselves because we, you know, we have that self-doubt or the imposter syndrome. And other limiting beliefs, I think, come up because somebody you respect or look up to has said something and you either interpreted it a certain way or, you know, it was maybe a statement that's not necessarily true, but it affected you in some way. And then you kind of keep it and keep going with that belief and it affects you for a long time. It can be hard to shed these things and overcome them. I know for myself, it was, hard for me to start my freelance business after a long career in a different field and doing something completely different. I had all these limiting beliefs, feeling that everyone knows what they're doing except for me. And it was a really hard one to overcome because you start from scratch, whether you have any experience in this field or not, and you have to build up your business and routines and all the systems and processes, and it's a lot. And then you maybe follow other colleagues or read articles written by other colleagues, and you think, man, they really got this together. And am I ever going to, make it? These are all valid questions, but they can really stall your progress, and they can, they're not helpful. In a way, it's good to be, it's good to kind of not feel like you know everything when you're just getting started. You have to have, a realistic view of what you're capable of doing, but you shouldn't be too, not let all these beliefs hold you back because just because everyone appears to be more advanced than you are. And the other thing that also I experienced when I got started was being a parent and a freelancer. You know, we've talked about feeling some guilt as a parent when you work, where you're working really hard in your business, you're doing something you enjoy, and also feeling like you could have probably spent more time with kids or you could have done something differently. There are lots of doubts, especially at the beginning, if you were just starting as a freelancer, on whether this is something you can keep up with, or if it's something that's good for you and your family, and can you even be good at it while you're parenting? And if you ask yourself these questions, and then you maybe see or hear some remarks from other people online, not necessarily even someone you know, but sometimes it could be an acquaintance or a family member who kind of like, oh, can you do this and raise kids? And, I've definitely heard that when I just got started as a freelancer, like somebody said, oh, you can't be a serious professional if you're taking care of little kids. And that really affected me. It really did. And for quite a long time, I was, and some other people gave me really bad advice that I thankfully didn't follow, to like, oh, don't tell anyone you have kids. And what? I was like, that's really inauthentic for me. It just doesn't feel and like it's something ridiculous. I should be doing. Yeah. And nothing can be further from the truth. You know, as a parent, you have so many other skills that can be helpful in running your business too. And it's really not an either or situation. But right. I know this is a limiting belief that held me back for a little while at the beginning. And I know many other people are sort of in the same boat.
Well, and it's not like successful people don't have kids too. It's just dumb.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Oh. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on this, Madalena? How do you view limiting beliefs in the work that we do?
Well, I think, like you said earlier, we all have them. Everybody has them. And so I think that's one thing for us all to remember and keep in mind, is that nobody is perfect and nobody thinks they can do everything. You know, everybody has some kind of limiting belief in their world, and it can hold you back. But, you know, the opposite of limiting beliefs is to know that you have them, but to still move forward. Right. And so it's that, you know, open mindset, growth mindset that people talk about. And I know that this topic used to be considered a little bit like woo-woo, but it's really not, if you think about it. I mean, mindset is everything. Because, you know, you think about starting your business. You didn't know what to do. Nobody knows what to do at first, right? So I think just knowing that, and knowing that everybody starts somewhere with anything, whether it's a new venture or a small step, whatever it is, doesn't really matter. Just knowing that everybody has these at some point, it's different for everyone, but we all have them, and we just have to recognize them, right? I think that's important. And yeah, so I think it takes some of the pressure off from knowing that everybody has these. And then the other thing I was going to say, because you shared something about some limiting beliefs, which I think is interesting. What you mentioned about how other people influenced your limiting beliefs. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that even, actually. I was thinking just more internally. And I think that it does go both ways. It can be, you know, influence from other people or just from yourself. And so for me, one of the things that I had some limiting beliefs about, I've always enjoyed writing, like ever since I was a kid, you know, reading and writing. And one of the things several years ago that I wanted to do to branch out the freelance side of my business was to start doing some health and wellness writing. I read it, I consume it. I have a good background in medicine and life sciences and such from all the translation work I've done for years and from being an interpreter to start with in healthcare. And I sort of like you in a way, it almost felt like, even though I had a business already, right? But it almost felt like starting over. And I was putting more pressure on myself probably than I needed to, because I didn't actually have to have this writing work. So there was, I mean, that sounds a little bit, you know, privileged, and it, I guess it is, but I didn't actually have to do it. It was something I just really wanted to do, you know? But I had that belief that, you know, why would somebody hire somebody who's been a translator for most of their career or all of their career, really? Somebody who has, you know, a background in working in two languages, but not a background in writing content for, you know, different health and wellness venues or something online. And the more I thought about it, I thought, no, these skills really do transfer in many ways, because as translators, we need to be good writers, you know, but there is that whole sense of anytime I think you're starting something new, those limiting beliefs can really kick in, but I think they can also continue to crop up, even if you're into this, whatever it is, project, venture, career, whatever, for years, because we just have limiting beliefs, and that's, it's okay. It's a thing, you know, but that was one I remember from several years ago. And then I thought, you know, if I continue to think that, then I won't get any clients for that type of thing, you know? And actually now my writing clients are some of my favorite clients to work with. And it's good work. It's recurring work, you know, and it's interesting, and you feel like you have some good ownership over it because you're actually creating it. And so it's super interesting to actually think about, but sometimes we don't want to think about our limiting beliefs. We know they're there, but we sort of want to sweep them under the rug a little bit, right? So I think the next thing we should mention here is how to identify when you have limiting beliefs in your professional work. So, you know, this could be something along the lines of how much money you believe that you could actually earn. And this one comes up a lot. And this is the reason I brought it up. This one I hear so much from people that say, well, you know, if you're a freelance translator, there's no way that you could make six figures. And I thought, that is so not true. You know, there are people that do it. Yeah, they might not be the majority, but if it were easy to do, everybody would do it, right? You know, so yes, you can. If other people, and the way I think about this is, if other people before you have done it, why can't you? You know, and that's that seems very simplistic, I guess. But it, if you really want to break down a limiting belief, you have to look for proof that it can be done. And then ask yourself, why do I think that I can't do it? Right. So I hear that one a lot from people, that they can't make a certain amount of money or that they can't raise their rates. I hear this one so much and it makes me so angry because I see people who haven't raised their rates since they started working, and they've been working for years and years and years. And I'm going, everybody in the world, every business out there raises their rates or fees at some point.
Yeah.
So why is it that with more experience and more training and more professional development and, you know, more time spent doing this work that you think you can't raise them? And nobody's saying you have to like double them, right? You know, but it's this feeling of I'm going to lose clients, or I'm going to not have any work at this rate or something. Well, yeah, you might lose a couple clients, but you might get better clients or get better work out of it. So It's sort of a way to flip the idea on its head a little bit. What do you think? What are some limiting beliefs that you see in our work that probably affect people?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many. I think if we were to start a list, it would be very long. I often hear from colleagues and some of my students and graduates, I'm new at this, so I'm going to charge less, you know? So that kind of like, I don't deserve sort of that. They don't say it out loud, but like, I don't deserve to be paid as much as someone who has been doing it for a long time. And that one really upsets me because, well, you're running a business. It's not a charity. It's not a hobby. You are there, you know, you're going in for it. Yes, you love this profession. You love this field, but you should make enough money to cover your expenses, you know, your business expenses, your working expenses. What are your financial goals? It doesn't matter that you're just getting started. You know, you're just as your expenses are still there. And if you think as a business, you need to bring in the money to cover the costs and earn some.
Right. Like, yeah. It's not, you don't have to be like the starving artist type of thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And also, I mean, on the other hand too, like if you're charging less, you're really hurting the field too, because you're undercutting.
That's a good way to think about it. If not for yourself, do it for your colleagues, you know?
Right. It's for the profession. It's for the good of the, and then another one I hear often in various situations is, oh, I'm just not good at XYZ. You know, you gave an example like, oh, can I really write? And I hear often from colleagues like, oh, I'm not a good writer, or I can't, you know, my English isn't great. And I thought that myself for a long time, you know, I'm not a native English speaker. So that one can hold a lot of people back. Like, oh, it's not my native language, so I shouldn't be writing in this language. Or you kind of feel like you aren't, your content isn't good enough. Also for like those getting started in the profession, like this feeling that it's you against the world and everyone is your competitor and you should like, you know, look out for yourself and this whole like competition thing. Oh, there's such competition in whatever field and people aren't making enough effort to actually work together with their colleagues and get to know them and find ways to collaborate. Lots of examples for sure. And I think that it's important to say that many people experience limiting beliefs in various areas. And if you ever feel like you're the only one, trust us, you're not. And just know that all of us have either gone through this at one stage or another, or experienced them from time to time, just in different areas. And so now let's shift to sharing some ways to overcome or challenge our limiting beliefs, because even though we all have limiting beliefs, that doesn't mean that they have to be our story. We can change them, but it definitely takes some work. I think the first step is to recognize, you know, whenever you say something, even mentally, like just to yourself, like, I can't do this because just, you know, stop yourself and ask yourself a question. Is it really true? And why do I think that? And find some, you know, proof that this can happen for you and that there are other people out there who do this and why can't you? And I think it's really helpful to, from the very beginning, you know, just as we shared in previous episodes, start to collect kind words from people, you know, your first clients or your clients in general, any kind of kind words or compliments or praise that you get from other people, however small it seems in the moment, just copy and paste it or save it in a folder and come back to it when you feel these moments of self-doubt. And it doesn't matter what your limiting belief in that particular circumstance is about. It just helps to kind of inspire you and boost you a little bit to see that you're people appreciate your expertise and what you do. Another thing that I think is helpful is to find people in a similar situation and reach out to them and support each other and share, you know, share what you're maybe wondering about and share what you're insecure about. And colleagues, I find, are always many colleagues are supportive of each other and try and lift each other up. And if you find like-minded people who are at a similar stage or work in a similar field, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to look for people working in the same language pair or, you know, doing the same thing you do, but someone who can relate or has something in common with you and you have a good vibe with. I think it's really important to have some sort of community. If you don't have one, start building it, start looking for those kinds of people and look for them rather than looking up to the people who may be very well respected and be, you know, big figures in our profession. If what they write and what they say brings you down, it's not very healthy to keep, you know, consuming that content because it keeps bringing you down and you keep doubting yourself. So not necessarily saying don't read that and don't listen to it at all. You know, you shouldn't ignore expertise that's been built for many years, but try and look for content that inspires you and kind of confirms that you can grow and become better. And just doing some research online, you know, if you have a doubt about something that you want to do but feel like you can't, surely you're not the only one with that limiting belief. There are a ton of articles and blog posts online on various limiting beliefs, and just reading those for a few minutes can help, you know, put your mind at ease. And I find that, you know, even if you feel like you can't do something, make yourself do it. You can do anything for 20 minutes. And that's where I feel like just setting a timer for 20 minutes and saying, okay, let's see how far I get. Just, you know, put all the distractions away. And if you think you're not a good writer, give yourself a topic and put a timer for 20 minutes and write whatever comes to mind. It doesn't have to be perfect. You're not going to press, you know, publish after you're done. It's just to get some things on paper or, you know, type them up. So yeah, I think those would be some tips that I could share. What about you, Madalena? Do you have any tips to share on challenging limiting beliefs?
I do. And I want to say that I agree with what you said about writing as well. And just keep in mind that all professional writers will tell you there's always the ugly first draft. Everybody does it. Everybody has it. So even the professionals do that. Yes, I do have some thoughts on this too, and we've already shared quite a few, but I think the idea of going back to that concept of flipping the script on those beliefs is really important. And sometimes, I think you made a good point, like sometimes we just don't have that in ourselves to flip the script, or we don't believe it even if we try to do it. So looking to other people around us to sort of lift us up when we need it, I think that's important, you know, and in our professional work, that's often our colleagues, but even your clients, when they've said like, oh, you've done an excellent job, that's really important to remember that you've done this before, like and you can do it again, whatever it is, you know, or you can diversify in another area or something, whatever it is you're trying to do, and looking, you know, for that evidence to the contrary, which I think is really key here. You mentioned something too about not consuming content from people who will bring you down or say you can't do this because, like that one about if you have children, you can't do this full time. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But looking to people who have a positive take on these things, who have put in the work, who have also had children or whatever, if that's the case, if that's something, you know, that maybe you're thinking about, and who have been where you are, because like I said earlier, everybody has started from somewhere, you know, and all those people also had limiting beliefs. And so I heard this as well recently from an expert on mentoring, and she said, find some mentors from afar. And I think that's, you know, that's something everybody can do without, you know, asking somebody to be their mentor and commit time you know, with somebody maybe they might not even know, but, you know, follow those people who are the positive people who've succeeded, who've sort of beat the odds, if that's what you're looking for, whatever it is, people who can inspire you versus those people who would bring you down otherwise. That's really helpful too. Another thing that I think is important, and I haven't tried this, but I've heard of this and I do see how it could be helpful, is when you have limiting beliefs, write them down, because then you can confront them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, we all have thoughts throughout the day, right? But we're always going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And when you actually write something down and look at it, many times you can sort of go, why do I think this? Like, you can actually pick it apart right there, because you're going, I wrote this down and now I'm looking at it and it seems ridiculous now to me, or something. You know, you might actually think, you know, writing it down is helpful because it's allowing you to sit with your thoughts. And I know that can sound a little bit scary and awkward or weird, but I think it is important to give ourselves time to actually think these things through and go, okay, well, I know there will be obstacles on the way to getting to this thing, whatever it is, but why do I think I can't overcome those? And is there proof in my past that shows that I have achieved something that wasn't easy, or that I had limiting beliefs about then? It could be something unrelated. You know, sort of giving yourself that sense of confidence, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah. So to round out our conversation on limiting beliefs, I think we have to touch on how to recognize when they're creeping in, because they do at, you know, whatever time, there's no schedule on these things, and what to do about it. And so one way to recognize the belief, a limiting belief, is to see what areas of your business might trip you up. So for example, do you often hesitate to send out a quote to a client when they're asking you for one? That might be a sign that you have a limiting belief about, you know, working with that type of client, or your rates, or that they might or might not accept your rate, or you're not good enough to charge this much, or something. What can you do about this? And one thing that I think is really important to do is to try to take the emotion out of things like, you know, pricing, as an example. This can be a whole different episode talking about this. So I'll try to stick to the basic idea, but that's, which is actually just setting your prices based on what you need to earn, what you feel your work should be valued at for your clients and your expertise. And this is often easier said than done. But if you can come up with like a rate sheet or a template for pricing your services, it can be a lot easier to lean into that when you are met with sending a quote to a client, if that's like a limiting belief that you have is around how much you're able to charge or earn. You know, this, I think that's a solid example of a way to do it. And limiting beliefs could be in any area, but this is one that seemed really obvious to me. And in fact, you could even go as far as to create email templates for sending out your quotes that has everything already outlined. So you really don't have to think about it the next time you need it. It's going to save you time, but it also takes out the guesswork and the hesitation from the process. And once you start to see that clients are willing to pay these rates, you're confirming for yourself that you actually can do this, and you're challenging that limiting belief just by doing that. So that's something, you know, like a tip that hopefully you can carry over into other areas. But if you keep this practice up, it's probably likely that you'll be able to overcome that belief that you've had around maybe this, you know, idea of how much you could earn or charge. So, I think the same goes for raising your rates, right? I mean, many people have limiting beliefs about this, but you think about all the other jobs where people get raises, like I said, from their bosses, or they earn more due to inflation. And so challenge that belief too. Why can't you do the same for yourself as your own boss? Of course you can, right? It's just this one area of your business where limiting beliefs might be holding you back, and you can come up with ways to challenge those things, you know? Yeah. What areas do you see where those things can creep in unexpectedly?
Yeah, I can think of a couple of examples. I just wanted to comment on what you said about pricing and rates too. I think it's it can also be helpful to, you know, track how much you're charging various clients. You know, if you're one of those people that, you know, raises your rates for the new clients, I do. When a new client comes, I raise my rates if I'm particularly busy. And that gives me an indication of how you know, what's the ceiling sort of for my rates in specific areas. And so far, nobody turned me down. So I think there's still room to go. But if you kind of track how much you are charging and how much you've charged in the past to some particular, you know, to specific clients, I think that's a helpful reminder if you ever experience that kind of self-doubt and limiting belief that you shouldn't be charging a particular amount, or you feel like your quote isn't going to be accepted by the client because you maybe have proof that it works for others, and you maybe charged even more to your other clients. And raising rates can be hard, but as you said, it's helpful to try and take the emotion out of it. I just do it at the end of the year. I decide how much I'm going to raise my rates for the next year, and I did that in December. I decided how my rates are going to change, and I just sent an email to all my ongoing clients, you know, current clients, and told them that my rates are increasing as of whatever, January 1st, and they're all were fine with it.
So yeah,
I think we often just kind of pump ourselves up and think that it's going to be a big issue, but
right,
most, you know, often isn't. And other areas I can think of is specialization, you know, either starting a new specialization or and on the flip side, diversifying. There can be some limiting beliefs in either or both of these areas. You know, and I hear that from both experienced colleagues and people who are just getting started, like, how can I be an expert in this field? Can I start, you know, can I build up this specialism, or does it make sense for me? Or if you're, you know, just getting started, like, you don't know what you want to specialize in, there's all these questions, and you kind of start bringing yourself down and feeling like you will never be as good as someone who has been doing this for many years. But everyone started somewhere. So
exactly.
Yeah, just tell yourself that. And it's always, you know, you can always reach out to people who are specialists in a specific area and ask them, hey, do you have any advice? Do you have any courses? Do you have any books that you liked and you would recommend? You know, not necessarily bombarding them with questions and like asking for to mentor you, but, you know, asking a couple of specific questions and just getting started on that. On the flip side, with diversification, people might have limiting beliefs on, like, is this wise of me? Am I sort of betraying the idea of being a translator or doing a specific thing or an interpreter? You know, if you're diversifying, how is this going to be perceived by others? We often wonder how others might think of what we do, even though their opinions of us is not our business.
I love it.
Networking, I think we mentioned it earlier too, but like networking and just meeting and interacting with colleagues who are more advanced or more experienced than us, that can also trigger a limiting belief that, oh, you know, they're so good at this and they've been doing this for many years. What can they possibly bring to the table? Well, again, we all started somewhere and we all have important and valid perspectives to share. It's a two-way street, you know, you're not just coming in there asking for free advice or mentoring or bombarding them with questions. You may be sharing or prompting them to think of something they haven't thought before.
That's a good point. Well, awesome. I really liked this conversation. I thought it was something that, you know, I think that's the other thing, is that we should all talk about these things more.
Yes, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that we should just wrap this up by saying that if you do want to talk with other colleagues about this, just start doing it. You know, I think that's one of the key ways to reduce limiting beliefs. And when you share these things, it does become easier to overcome them. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, as you said that, I thought it doesn't necessarily mean you have to like go and start writing on social media and telling people. No, but like, you know, privately with people you trust and like-minded colleagues, it's
exactly
it's important to normalize these things.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And if you'd like to share your experience with limiting beliefs in your business and some tips to challenge or overcome them, you can leave a comment on our show notes page for this episode, which you'll find on our website, or you can tag us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Or you can email us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
Our email subscribers will get a summary of today's episode, including the links to all the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving your emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you liked this episode, we'd love it if you would share it with a colleague or friend and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. This only takes a minute, and reviews help other translators and interpreters find the podcast. So we really appreciate it. If you're not sure how to leave a review, we've recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it, and you can find that in our show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you liked this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.